This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
The must-have product this holiday season isn't a toy or a video game. It's a little box with a pair of sterile nasal swabs and some reagent fluid. And it should soon get a little easier to find. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Tuesday, December 21st. Good to have you with us on this first day of winter. Omicron is now the dominant strain of the virus here in the U.S. and spreading at staggering speed. Today, the Biden administration announced new measures to respond. Military medical workers will prepare to help out at civilian hospitals. New testing and vaccination sites will open. And the federal government will distribute 500 million at-home COVID tests for free. But moving anything around the country these days hasn't been easy. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more on the logistics of getting all those at-home tests to our homes.
There are a lot of components that go into an at-home testing kit.
The packaging, the testing strip itself, the cotton swab, the fluid that you use to administer the test.
That's Gigi Granvall at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. She's been following the development of COVID tests throughout the pandemic, and she says many of those components have at times been in short supply.
There's been issues getting the cotton swabs, the nitrocellulose that is used for the testing strips.
The Biden administration has spent hundreds of millions of dollars helping manufacturers make more components. But manufacturing capacity hasn't caught up with the latest surge of demand, says Neil Siegel, a professor at the University of Maryland School of Public Health.
Manufacturers, as they stand today, won't be able to manufacture the 500 million tests that the Biden administration has committed to in a matter of weeks. But I don't know that that's the intent.
Once manufacturers do scale up production, they'll have to ship those tests at a time when the supply chain has a lot of weak links. Julie Swan researches healthcare supply chains at North Carolina State University.
There could be links where not only components are in short supply, but worker absenteeism could lead to delays.
On the other hand, Swan says it'll be easier to distribute rapid tests than COVID vaccines, which have to be held at low temperatures. Swan says that means the Biden administration has more options to deliver tests.
As examples, they could use the National Guard. They could partner with Amazon and Target and CVS.
The challenge, Swan says, will be making sure that the supply meets demand everywhere in the country. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Wall Street broke its 3-day losing streak. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Employers struggling to fill empty seasonal jobs this winter at hotels and ski resorts, for example, just got some relief from the federal government. The Biden administration announced this week it's expanding the cap on H-2B visas for the winter season. An extra 20,000 will be up for grabs for employers looking to hire temporary foreign workers by March 31st. That's on top of the 33,000 already available. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports.
In a typical winter, Jeff Hanley at Aspen Skiing Company says the resort complex hires hundreds of temporary workers.
Unfortunately, in our business, we're never fully staffed.
The company uses visa workers at its bars and restaurants and to teach ski lessons in different languages. But this year, it's been hard to get international workers. For one, they have to be vaccinated to enter the U.S. Plus, visa processing has been delayed during the pandemic.
We had some employees who had to travel from their home country to another country where they could get into the consulate to get what they needed to get here.
Steve Yeller, a professor of immigration law practice at Cornell, says if employers get past these hurdles, the visas could help the labor shortage a little bit.
A little bit is the operative word. You know, an additional 20,000 visas is not a lot in the greater scheme of things.
Plus, what seemed like a good solution to the labor problem a month ago may not even work now. Brad Hirschbein at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research says the Omicron variant likely has employers rethinking their staffing equations.
Because there's a lot of uncertainty, some of the employers may decide that they can't project whether they're going to need all of those workers or all the visas.
And the price tag may not even be worth it. Between application and legal fees, Hirschbein says it costs an employer thousands of dollars to hire just one worker on a seasonal visa. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Sticking with labor, workers at a Starbucks store in the company's hometown of Seattle announced plans today to unionize. That's after a Buffalo, New York store became the first to do so recently. And they're far from the only workers who've been seeking better pay and working conditions during the pandemic. This year's labor movement has reached factories, warehouses, fast food joints, and university campuses. Marketplace's Savannah Marr reports on the new momentum among graduate students.
Toward the end of a typical semester at Columbia University, graduate students would be busy teaching classes and grading papers. Not now.
We've been on strike for over 50 days now.
That's Mandy Spishak-Thomas with the Columbia Graduate Students Union, which is seeking higher wages. In her department, in the School of Social Work, she says graduate students make just under $30,000 a year in New York City.
It is just absolutely unacceptable that people are making this much under a living wage.
The pandemic has laid bare challenges for grad students and created new ones, says Rebecca Given with Rutgers University.
Grads have had little control about whether they're working from home or in, for example, classrooms or labs that may not feel completely safe.
Meanwhile, she says many have been watching their institutions slash department budgets and lay off faculty.
Except a sub-living wage now because of some kind of promised future is not a realistic trade-off anymore.
Given says that's in part what's mobilizing grad students to start forming new unions, like at MIT, Indiana University, and at the University of New Mexico, where grad student workers, including Katie Despo, just won a union card count.
Not having a voice in safety during the pandemic, it really just compelled us to ramp up the union effort.
UNM's administration is fighting that unionization effort, arguing that its graduate students are just that, students, not workers. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
For years, affordable housing near many national parks and other outdoor destinations has been hard to find. The pandemic and the lifestyle changes it has wrought have only made that worse. That's in part because many long-term rentals that once housed locals have been converted into short-term rentals for vacationers. It's a familiar story in recreation wonderlands across the West, from Moab, Utah to Bend, Oregon, and Joshua Tree, California, where visitors have been coming in record numbers, but the workers who wait their tables and pour their drinks are getting priced out. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher has more.
Tiffany Hopkins grew up in a few of the small towns that dot the remote landscape near Joshua Tree National Park. She's worked here in the service industry for years, bartender, restaurant manager, server. She loves the wild beauty of the desert.
I always tell people, drive into National Park and literally look up at midnight. There's no sky like the sky.
And she talks to a lot of tourists who've come to hike in the boulder fields and Instagram the cactus gardens and shaggy Joshua trees. But all those likes have side effects for locals like Hopkins. This fall, she got notice that her lease wouldn't be renewed. So she and her 12-year-old son, who has special needs, have to move out of their Yucca Valley triplex. That will cost her.
I've just been like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I? And I have no savings. I have to save $2,200 essentially to move out. And I have about $600 in my bank account.
Hopkins is doing this on her own. Her ex-husband and father of her son, Cutter, died last year.
Single mother with an autistic child, it's not easy, you know?
Hopkins has heard that the triplex will become a short-term rental. It's a trend here. She says locals aren't against tourism.
What we're against is getting it overran and then us, you know, having no options because, you know, people want to just cash in. It's not fair to people that have been here for their whole lives.
Marketplace analyzed data from the census and from AirDNA, a website that provides short-term rental data and analytics. We found that in and around Joshua Tree, there are about 4,000 housing units with more than 1,100 short-term rentals in the area. That's roughly a quarter of all local housing stock now set aside for vacationers. We also looked at towns near the most visited national parks in the western United States and saw an increase in vacation rentals between 2019 and 2021.
There was a significant shortage of affordable rental housing in these areas even before the pandemic.
Andrew Arend is with the National Low Income Housing Coalition. He says the shortage is a crisis in tourist areas that rely on low-wage service workers.
There's not the housing that's affordable for people working in those jobs.
We reached out to Airbnb, which is the listing service for the majority of the vacation rentals near Joshua Tree. In an email, Airbnb called short-term rentals, quote, a tool for economic empowerment that helps families participate in these regions' long-standing tourism economies. Some communities now regulate the licensing or density of vacation rentals, like Bend, Oregon, or Summit County, Colorado. Joshua Tree does not. So some locals are taking things into their own hands.
This is the Wild Wild West.
This Joshua Tree resident and local business owner has a small compound of retrofitted Airstreams and trailers that he rents to five locals at below market rates.
Depending on the trailer, we rent trailers from $350 to $500.
We're not using his name because he says these dwellings are not legal. They're next to his own cabin, an elaborate cactus garden, and composting toilets. The property owner says he was lucky to buy this land for cheap decades ago and now wants to give back.
And it just solves, you know, a small piece of the housing problem, but I'm doing what I can do.
Back in Yucca Valley, after a stressful couple of weeks, Tiffany Hopkins heard from a former landlord.
Super, super sweet lady. And she was like, hey, I have a unit coming up open if you want it.
Hopkins will pay more rent, but she says it means everything to be able to stay in this valley. Her autistic son loves his teachers. And she's had a rough year after the death of her ex. So friends check in.
And that's part of like what we do here. We watch out for each other. The community is amazing.
She says that's what's at risk when the rental market caters to people who are just passing through. In this beautiful, wild landscape, it's her neighbors that make it home. In Joshua Tree, California, I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace. Coming up,
an opportunity that I've never been able to have before.
Gotta grab those when they come along. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 560 points, 1.6%, to finish at 35,492. The NASDAQ gained 360 points, 2.4%, to end at 15,341. And the S&P 500 added 81 points, 1.7%, to land at 4,649. We heard from Justin Ho about the Biden administration's plans to distribute 500 million at-home COVID tests. Test maker Abbott Laboratories gained 0.2%. Hologic, Inc. was down 1.3%. 3M gained 0.1%. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.47%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. We'll get an update on inflation later this week. The Fed's preferred measure, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, comes out Thursday, and it will likely confirm what we're already feeling every time we open our wallets. Inflation, though, isn't just a concern here in the U.S. In Turkey, price increases are becoming so severe, many people can't afford basic necessities, and that's creating some tough choices. The BBC's Victoria Craig has more from that country's largest city, Istanbul.
Turkey is in the midst of a currency crisis, which is fanning the red-hot flames of inflation. Official data show prices have surged more than 21% in the last year, while the value of the nation's lira currency has nearly halved since January. To put that in perspective, it now takes about 13 lira to buy just one U.S. dollar. That devaluation means simple errands like grocery store shopping have become a lot more expensive. And for many, budgeting and saving is now impossible.
I cannot pay my rent properly. I rent my room to foreigners.
That's Montoya, a college student in her 20s. She declined to give her last name. Many in Turkey right now don't want to give their last names for fear of attracting government attention. Montoya is trying to make ends meet by working part-time at a local bar. She says her employer can't afford to raise her wages, so last month she resorted to renting out her spare bedroom to tourists.
I'm really worried about it because I'm really scared when someone comes to me and I don't know him or her, and it's staying at home with someone I don't know. It's really scary, actually, but I don't have anything to.
Montoya needs the money not just to make sure she can put a roof over her head, but to buy basic necessities. On the day we met, she told me it now takes twice as much money to fill one basket at the supermarket. That's a common refrain from families and grocery store workers we spoke to across Istanbul, and it's led economists to believe inflation is much higher than the official rate of 21.3%. Dermis Yilmaz is a former Turkish central bank governor who served between 2006 and 2011. He's now a member of the opposition party.
There are groups of academicians who has come up with a
technical measuring inflation, the measurement is even close to 60%. Therefore, this creates a huge burden on the society at large.
Normally, central banks would raise interest rates to combat this kind of inflation, but the Turkish central bank has instead cut rates 4 times in the past 4 months. It's all because President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who has a heavy influence on the central bank, believes unconventionally low rates will spur job creation and dampen price rises. On Sunday, 2 days after the latest interest rate reduction, he told Turkish state TV his Muslim faith, which forbids charging or receiving interest on loans, has guided his views on monetary policy. He said those complaining about it shouldn't expect any other stance from him, and he vowed to continue doing what is required by Islamic teachings. Economists, though, say that policy will only deepen Turkey's economic problems. Here's Dermis Yilmaz again.
In order to have high economic growth, he has to bring about first conditions which is necessary for price stability and the financial stability and the fair distribution of resources. Without doing this, I think the president is living in a different cosmos. Without achieving these necessary conditions, having a high rate of growth is not possible.
We tried to speak to President Erdogan's finance minister about the economic strategy, but our requests went unanswered. As the government pursues its unorthodox policy, the everyday struggle for many continues, especially for young people in Turkey, where the median age is just under 33. Many, like Montoya, feel the only way to have a prosperous future is to leave the country.
When I graduate, I am planning to go abroad, maybe Spain, to work permanently, maybe temporarily, I don't know. We will see.
Her story is like those of students we heard about across the country who feel left behind and increasingly disadvantaged by their government's economic policies. In Istanbul, Turkey, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
The aforementioned inflation here in the U.S. is complicating holiday budgets this year. Families were already adjusting how much they're spending on gifts for family and friends before Omicron created a whole new level of uncertainty. Reporter Veronica Dagger with the Wall Street Journal spoke to 4 families around the country about how they're making spending decisions. We got her on the phone to talk about what their stories tell us about the larger economy.
Well, it was really important for us to pick a nice, diverse group of people that reflected so much of what's happening in the country today. You know, we spoke to a young woman who was a beneficiary of some of the student loan repayment pause. I mean, that's a big issue for a lot of young people right now. We spoke to an entrepreneur. A lot of people are starting businesses. We spoke to somebody who did a big reinvention. And I think that was a lot of people's dreams for this time in the pandemic. Some people actually realized that dream. And then we spoke to a guy who, you know, said pretty much business as usual. And so I think that's also the case for a fair amount of people.
Yeah, let's dig into a couple of these stories. You talked about student loans. I think you were speaking about Ashley Paredes, who yes, is saving money, but actually plans to spend less this year on the holidays. What's behind that decision?
Well, you know, I really admire her. She has a young child, 18-month-old daughter, and she wants a better life for her. So in reality, you know, Ashley could go out there, be spending more money because she's not having to fork out so much in student loans these days. But she says, you know what? I got an opportunity that I've never been able to have before. She was able to pay down $5,000 worth of credit card debt over the course of a year. She said, in any other circumstances, I wouldn't be able to do that. This has been a gift. So why would I, now that I'm credit card debt free, you know, the first time in about 3 years, she told me, why would I go out and rack up more debt when I'm in probably one of the best financial situations I've been in years?
I wonder about the larger takeaway. Obviously, this is just 4 families, different, you know, between themselves, but, you know, just a small sample of the economy. What do you think the larger takeaway is here?
You know, I think there's a few. I think
Ashley's model of not necessarily needing to rack up spending when you don't feel like you need anything to prove. So you don't necessarily have to spend your money just because you have one. I think that's a big takeaway. For the entrepreneurs out there, I think the big takeaway is, you know, it's great to start a business. We've heard so many people doing that this year. Awesome. But know that there's a lot of challenges, especially this year for entrepreneurs. Also, one of the people we spoke to, Lara, she did a reinvention. She moved from New York City to a farm in Oregon. Big picture, if you're thinking about a reinvention, a big, you know, sort of ripping up of your lifestyle and your life, try to really dig into how much that's going to cost you. And you have the stomach, so to speak, to deal with those vagaries.
I think your story also speaks to this disconnect that we see between how people are doing financially, at least by the numbers in this economy, and how they're feeling. I mean, as you write, yeah. Americans are sitting on cash, watching 401k balances rise, starting millions of new businesses, enjoying their pick of jobs. And yet, you know, 3 out of the 4 folks you talk to are being more cautious this holiday season.
Right. That they're in certain aspects of their life, they're struggling a little bit. I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there who have faced these serious financial difficulties. And even if you haven't, I mean, I don't think we can underestimate the psychological impact of this ongoing pandemic. There's just always this thing in the back of your head, like, are things going to shut down? Am I going to have to get out of work because of a health emergency, because of this COVID thing that doesn't go away? You know, I think there's that reluctance and that caution that is affecting not only our concerns about our health, but also our finances. That's a big cloud over many of us.
Yeah, a cloud that seems to be getting thicker these days.
Unreal.
Veronica Dagger brought us this slice of the American economy through the stories of 4 families in the Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
This final note on the way out today, have you found yourself swearing more lately? If so, welcome to the club. The Wall Street Journal reports that the use of certain choice words, starting with F, SH, and A, has risen more than 40% in the last 2 years on Facebook and 27% on Twitter. And the maker of a profanity filtering software called CleanSpeak says the volume of verboten words it's picked up in online discussions has more than tripled in the past 18 months. Language experts chalk it up to pandemic stress and the dissolution of workplace norms. Keeping it clean here at Marketplace, of course. Hi, Mom. We've got to go, but first, here's your moment of economic context for this Tuesday. Access to COVID testing depends a lot on where you live. Several states are already providing free rapid tests to their citizens. Colorado, New Jersey, Washington State, and Massachusetts among them. And the CDC has been distributing free rapid test kits at some airports. I dragged my kids to stand in line outside the Baltimore Public Library today, which was handing out free tests starting at 10 a.m. They were gone in minutes. We left empty-handed. But it led to a good discussion about access and who gets to stand in line in the middle of a workday. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Siobhan Brett, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. I'm Amy Scott. We'll be back tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.